He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Friday. It's Friday and I wanna get a 29th of May, the last Friday of this wonderful month. It has been a perfect spring May. It's going so fast. Who's the greatest football player of all times? Just ask him.
Maybe Tom Brady.
Tom Brady?
Mm-hmm.
What about O.J. Simpson?
No. O.J. Simpson never won a Super Bowl.
2,000 yards in the snow.
Yeah, never had a six. I don't know that he had a winning team with the Bills, did he?
Who do you think the best football player ever, Crash?
Joe Montana.
Joe Montana, terrific. San Francisco 49ers.
How many Super Bowls Joe Montana
A host, four of them. But I think the greatest football player ever, maybe the greatest professional athlete ever. Well, first of all, I think LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan. I said that yesterday. I don't know if you agree. Not as elegant, not as acrobatic, but I think in all other regards, the greatest basketball player, one of the greatest athletes, I say the greatest athlete, or at least the greatest football player ever, will be joining us live at 10:30. Jim Brown of the Cleveland.
Oh, cool. Oh.
And how nice for my wife to have Jim Brown, the greatest football player, and then LeBron James, Cleveland Cavaliers. Poor Cleveland, the fifth bloodiest city in America, suffering from the same convulsions as Detroit, more notoriously as Baltimore. And I want to talk about the river of blood that continues to flood in Baltimore. Also, they got this Bronx gangbanger. They've ID'd him anyway, who assassinated the 14-year-old up there. So that's good news. So we have to talk about murder and mayhem. We're staying on that our crusade. And Jim Brown is coming on because Jim Brown is one of those. You may recall Noam and I yesterday were struggling over how do we fix this. It's easy to bitch about something. This has been my beef about investigative reporting and, you know, just local news generally, or even the networks. They are excellent at exposing a problem, much less so in doing something to fix the problem they are complaining about. And I think you have really no right to complain about something unless you, and until you, are doing something about it. We're talking about black people killing black people at this extraordinary rate. Guess what? Jim Brown, the NFL legend and a man I've worked with before. We poured through Cabrini Green, the worst housing project in America, on the outskirts of Chicago together. I've seen him in action. He's got a great program. It's already in New York and New Jersey. The guy comes from Manhasset. Did you know that, Jim Brown?
I didn't know that, no.
So we'll talk about Jim Brown, his roots. It's a big birthday today. The young and gracious 35th president of the United States, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, would have been 98 years old today. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
But let me start someplace that you'd never would have expected. So Fox News Latino, the very, very successful website geared toward American Latinos that Fox News put together. So here, ironically, you have this very conservative news network. And they have the most successful, as far as I know, Latino or second generation Latino oriented website, Fox News Latino. And they asked me about Elian Gonzalez. Elian Gonzalez, you remember the then 6-year-old kid? Were you down there at all in the news business?
No, I was too young, but I remember the story.
It was 15 years ago. And he's 6 years old, 1999. Elian Gonzalez is one of the two survivors of a sinking raft or boat, actually, that came filled with refugees from Cuba. So his mom takes Ellie on. There's 12 adults on board. 10 of the adults, including the mom, died. 2 survivors. Elian is one of them. They wash up on shore. So now he's in the United States, and he has relatives in Miami, Elian does. So the relatives in Miami clutch the kid and say, now the kid is rescued. The kid has now come. But guess what? The father of the child, the mother and the father were estranged, was a loyal communist Cuban, still in Cuba. He said, wait a second. You can't keep my child. I want my child back. Under the laws of the United States here, you have this law-abiding, by every measure, fit parent who wants his child back. The uncle in Florida can't keep the child, even though, you know, they raised all this argument. They argued it all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, but the Clinton administration and all of the federal courts, including the Supreme Court, agreed that the father had to get the child back. So you may recall the vivid picture of Elian being discovered in the closet by the INS agent, who later became a friend of mine named Jim Goldman, toting his machine gun. Elian looks terrified. The uncle is horrified. And it's the moment where Elian is captured. So guess what? Jim Avila, my old buddy from ABC News, who has access to Cuba, found Elian Gonzalez. You know, Cuba now opening up to the United States. You have this extraordinary rapprochement happening, the normalization of relations. Jim Avila finds Elian Gonzalez. Now he's almost 22 years old. Elian gives Jim an interview and says, you know what? I can tell you exactly what I said. Let me quote from Jim's interview. I mean, he doesn't speak any English, but here's what Elian said. He said, quote, for my family, it has always been, we always have the desire to say to the American people, to say to each household, our gratitude, appreciation, and love that we have. This is Elian Gonzalez speaking. He became like a communist hero when he went back to Cuba. Perhaps one day, Elian says, we could pay a visit to the United States. I could personally thank those people who helped us, who were there by our side, because we're so grateful for what they did. So that's Elian Gonzalez speaking. So I call up Jim Goldman, who I knew because I covered the story. And Jim Goldman says, first of all, you know, don't blame us for the whole machine gun thing, because what we did is we showed force so we didn't have to use force. So the recovery, the retrieval of the child was, you know, nobody got hurt. And now here's what Jim goes on to say. He and some of the others involved in Elian's forcible removal are, quote, in the process of extending an invitation to Elian from those who rescued him. The kid's going to be 22. It's been 15 years. Now he's announced he wants to return to the United States. So a couple of us got together and reached out to Elian and said we would host him. He was an innocent bystander, probably the last battle of the Cold War. So isn't that nice? So you have Jim saying, and he goes on to say, now, frankly, I'd welcome Elian coming back. Cuba is opening up cruise ships, airlines, casinos. They all want a piece of the action. The movement is huge, and the kid wants to come back for a visit. It's totally appropriate. And we agents involved in his rescue would love to be among those who would welcome him back. So in all the bad news that we've covered, isn't this a sweet story? Isn't this, wouldn't that be so glorious to see the kid with the agent who's now retired as a private eye in Miami? He's tough as nails. I love Jim Goldman. To see them, you know, kind of shake hands, and it would be symbolic of the end of the Cold War as regards Cuba and the United States. It is ridiculous. It is perpetuated by hardcore politicians who want to court that all-important South Florida Cuban vote, the vote that gave George Bush the victory over Al Gore. I just think it would be terrific, and I was so glad to talk to Jim, to catch up with Jim, and to hear about Elian. Screw those who say we have to live in the past. I'm sorry, the past is the past. Let's move on. I just, folks, wanted to share that with you. I think it's very touching, and all the bad news, including some of which we will deal with on this program in the coming segments, I wanted you to hear something on this beautiful spring day that should make you feel good. Elian wants to come back. The agents who removed him forcibly from his family want to host him. And wouldn't that be a nice and symbolic gesture in many ways? I think, as important as the opening of a U.S. embassy in Cuba. And everybody I know is going to Cuba. Everybody I know is, they want to get in there. They want to be business people there, or at least they want to visit. And I think that's a wonderful thing. But I must say, well, here, well, let me just take one call on this, from Oyster Bay. John's on the line. Hey, John, happy Friday. What's up? What are you thinking about?
Happy Friday to you. I just wanted to clarify a few points on that thing. I remember that. Number one, under New York state law, that when the alien was conceived, the mother's father had already been divorced. So he, under New York state family law, would have had no legal right to the kid. Attorney General Reno ordered them to turn the kid over. She had no authority.
I disagree with your first legal premise, but go ahead.
They got a bogus warrant. Of how you can get a warrant when the kid was in plain sight. There was no criminal activity going on. This was a political thing that the Clintons wanted to, they wanted to, you know, probably cement relations with Cuba, possibly, but it was a travesty. And, for, and that was early, and a 3-1 raid on Palm Sunday, which was a disgrace. It was a disgrace, as Curtis would say.
Well, I think that all's well that ends well, John, but I certainly appreciate your point of view, and I think that it was represented by a lot of people in the Clinton administration, or more specifically Al Gore and the Democrats, paid the price.
They were a bunch of fascist stormtroopers the way they stormed that house.
Well, you got to meet Jim. He's not a fascist stormtrooper at all, and nobody got hurt. Nobody got hurt. That's the main thing. And the protesters burned tires in the streets, and they tried to disrupt Miami, but nobody got hurt.
Just the rights of a little boy who wanted to stay here with his family.
The little boy was... how do you know the little boy wanted to stay here with his family? And it was an uncle he'd never met before.
He spoke on television. He said to his father, he said, "Father, I want to stay here with my family."
Well, I don't know. I don't know where you heard that. It sounds like propaganda to me.
I remember watching the kid on TV.
Well, I followed the story. They have a statue to Elian and Jose Marti in downtown Havana. He's been very happy. He could have attempted to escape. He's been a very vocal pro Castro Cuban. You got to get over the past, mate. You got to get over it. It's over. The Cold War is over.
I'm just pointing out it was a travesty when it happened. That's nothing we can be proud of.
And so how do you feel about the opening of relations between Cuba and the United States?
Probably a good thing.
Okay. Let's end the segment on that common ground, John. I appreciate your call to 866-HERALDO. I really don't encourage calls on the Cuban thing because I have so much territory to cover. It is Friday. It's a good weather week. Is it going to rain on Sunday?
Thunderstorms, yeah.
Thunderstorms. I'm still riding that damn bike for Ramsey Subaru to make money for autism centers in Bergen County on Sunday. I'll give you those details.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Welcome back. 26 after Chris, go to 31, please. We have a, there's a great story. We have a caller I want to get to momentarily. But Chris Perez and Larry Salone in the New York Post did a great update on that story of the 14-year-old kid who was shot to death in the Bronx. Before I get to the perpetrator, the kid himself, you should know, you think about a seventh grader, 14 years old, and how young that is. 14 years old, the kid already had 5 arrests, the 14-year-old. He flaunted his gang ties. I guess he was a Crip. In pictures and social media. So he was shot down, 45 caliber pistol. They got the guy, a gangbanger, Travis Block, 25 years old. He's a member of the 280 crew, affiliated with the Crips. So I guess the kid was a blood. Just a more violence, just a 14-year-old with 5 arrests already. Assassinated. It's just sickening. Just sickening. All right, let me take this call. 866-HERALDO. What's on your mind? Who are you? I mean, to the extent you want to identify yourself, tell me what's on your mind.
Well, I was a police officer back in 1981, and I got shot in the line of duty in Brooklyn. And you were at Kings County Hospital to interview me, but they couldn't because I was undercover.
So they wouldn't let me in your room to do the interview?
Well, one allowed because I was working with a task force with DEA.
God bless you for your service. So what's on your mind in the context of the streets running red with blood, bad enough here, much worse, gushing in other cities like Body Bag Baltimore?
Well, it's kind of an outside suggestion. All these cops were sworn to do a job, And I understand they want to do the job because they're afraid to. But what they should get together with the PBA and say, we're going to do our job, every damn one of us. We're going to lock up the gang members. We're going to lock up the violent felons. We're going to lock them up. You want to charge us? Go right ahead. Do it. And pull their bluff. And day by day by day, going to start arresting people. And what are you going to do? Charge every cop on the street?
So what you're suggesting, a hero cop wounded in the line of duty, a former NYPD, you are suggesting that the Baltimore PD, rather than holding off, their arrests have plummeted down more than 50% as the murders have increased more than 50%. You're saying the cops should call the administration's bluff and be proactive and just go in there and kick ass, take names, and let the cards fall where they may?
Because once they start locking them up, tape is going to see felons and gang members and lock them up. So it's going to show an agenda. If the DA and the mayor starts charging them, people are going to say, wait a second, they're doing a job. You're going to charge every damn cop on the street in Baltimore? Because these guys want to do their job. I know it's a cop. They want to do their job. So they got to do it in unison, lock them up, and if either you have everyone on the force being charged, that's going to look stupid.
Did you ever react with embarrassment when our own thin blue line called in sick, you know, the whole blue flu thing when they were in contract negotiations?
No, I didn't. We didn't do that. I worked Suffolk, and we didn't do that. We had stuff going on with contracts, and no, it was never done. People thought we did it. They said, oh, you're not getting your money, so you're going to... No, we did. We did our job. I worked in a bad area.
Where?
Well, put it this way. In the 70s, I worked North Amityville. I grew up...
You're in Amityville. Yeah, I was going to say Amityville. We used to have our gang wars with Amityville.
I grew up in Lindenhurst. We were your rivals. You were West Babylon. We were Lindenhurst.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, again, thank you for your service and for your advice. I hope cops are listening. In Baltimore, by the way, so just in the month of May, there are up to 38 homicides, and the last two included an 8-year-old boy shot in the head yesterday, 8:20 in the morning. I mean, come on, ladies and gentlemen, this is the civil rights issue of our day. Jim Brown, the great Jim Brown's got an idea. Next.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
All this energy calling me back where it comes from. It's such a crude attitude. It's back where it belongs. All the little kids growing up on the skids are going Cleveland rocks, Cleveland rocks. Jumpin' Gene Gene and Moody James Dean is going Cleveland rocks, Cleveland rocks, Cleveland rocks, Cleveland rocks.
Like my wife Drew Carey's theme song, Eastern Cleveland. We have a special before we get to the great, speaking of Cleveland, the great Cleveland Browns running back. We have a special guest just came in my studio unexpectedly. Now, who's this young man?
This is Isaiah Lucas.
And I notice he has a Make-A-Wish button. Why is that?
He was diagnosed last year at the age of 2. It was stage 4 neuroblastoma cancer. We had surgery up here last year, a 10.5-hour surgery, and so he wanted to come back to New York City with no ouchies.
So that's his make-a-wish, to come back to New York with no ouchies?
Yes.
Well, welcome back. And what's this? What's he eating here?
He's brought you some ice cream with sprinkles.
That's for me?
That's for you. Ah,
adorable. Thank you. Can I have a... Give me a high five. Oh, thank you so much. No ouchies for you. And now let's bring on someone who inflicted many, many ouchies on rival linemen and defensive ends of defensive backs, the great Jim Brown, one of the greatest football players, one of the greatest athletes ever. You know, people remember all his rushing touchdowns, over 100 of them. He also caught plenty. I think he got 25 touchdown passes that he caught. I welcome the man with a great conscience, a great heart, a great ball player, Jim Brown, to the program. Welcome, mate. How you doing?
I'm doing real fine. I'm glad to see that you're doing well.
Well, I'm hanging in there, brother. And you know what? I remember so fondly our going into Cabrini Green and how you talked to the, you know, it was the Bloods and the Crips in those days too, how you talked to them. Why, when you could easily coast on your laurels, Hall of Famer, college and pro, you could just do the usual. Why do you take out so much time to try to deal with some of these real hardcore cases that are perpetrating such violence, Chicago and New York. I know you set up in New Jersey, too. Why? Why, Jim?
Well, I'll tell you, Araldo, life is a beautiful thing. You know, you have to live it and decide what's valuable. And if God's given me a talent and I'm blessed and I use that talent with my education and I use it with my athletic abilities, then maybe I can do something special. So to me, it's the thing to do. Man's humanity to man is the ultimate. It's the only thing we can do is help another human being live a better life. And it doesn't get much more complicated than that. So I have a special relationship with people that maybe at the bottom of the ladder. And I've always maintained that. And therefore, there is a love affair when I go into territories and I meet people and I come with a proposal to help them. So it's a matter of doing what you are supposed to do and what you love doing. And it's not very complicated. And so that's it, Araldo. You know, that's...
Well, tell us about American. Is that program still active?
Oh, absolutely. We're getting ready to launch a major drive on violence across the country. New Jersey might be our first city that we're going to be in. We're going to have a lot of celebrities, and we're going to call it Summit Number 2, Public Safety. Summit Number 1 is when we came to Ali's rescue. Well, not really rescue, but we came into an area of support for his stance on the Vietnam War. And now we are dealing with the violence among young black men around this country, which is really a terrible set of circumstances.
It's a terrible, terrible epidemic. So what do you do? What do you tell a kid who's in the Bloods or the Crips? You know, you're not going to be able, are you going to get them out of the gang? How do you get them to stop killing each other?
Well, I'll tell you something, Geraldo. We had, for 15 years, we had a peace treaty in L.A. on the west side between the Bloods and the Crips, and we didn't have one homicide. And that's an unbelievable situation. The communication is very important. The fact that you care, the fact that you open up your home, you trust them. And most of these individuals just want some type of father figure to relate to and some kind of opportunity to do something that is legal that will allow them to make a decent living. And America today is really like top heavy. The rich is doing really well, but the bottom is suffering tremendously. So the jobs, the education, and the love.
Well, where do you get the jobs from, Jim? And Jim Brown, the football great, is my guest. He's got a program called American. It is a program that reaches out to the hardest core, those who are killing each other in the streets of Baltimore today. Those are the folks Jim Brown works with. He's coming to New Jersey. You're coming, I guess, to Newark. Now, yeah. So what would you say to a kid? Do you have a job to offer them?
Well, I'll tell you, it doesn't come that easy. The first thing is really the education and the commitment of an individual to do everything they can do for themselves. So we have a curriculum that we really entice them to go through. It's a life management skills curriculum which teaches a person how to really fend for themselves. And a lot of these individuals that don't have jobs could have jobs if they understood how to approach an employer. And there are certain techniques that you learn, and we teach that. And when they take the responsibility for their own actions, then violence doesn't become a part of any kind of advancement. See, you can't say if you give me a job, I'm going to stop shooting people. It doesn't work that way. You've got to decide that you're going to do the right thing, and you're going to do everything you can do, and then I'm going to help you do that in every way that I can. So if I know there's an industry that's hiring, or there is a construction company that's building buildings and watts, and I can get you on that particular job, then we're going to try to do that in every way that we can. So it's the communication and the acceptance of responsibility if an individual don't accept responsibility for their actions, then there's nothing you can do with
it. Amen. Amen. I mean, I love you. I love what you do. You touch the lives of gang members, prison inmates, ex-cons, at-risk kids. I mean, you really, in the almost 30 years you've been at this, you've touched so many lives.
Well, Ron, I'll tell you something that's so beautiful. A lot of the young men of today that are great athletes, making a lot of money, having great impact on our cities, are stepping up. You know, Ray Lewis in Baltimore is really a tremendous soldier there. Curtis Martin is got all the sensitivities and is willing to loan himself to this effort. And when you talk about Bill Belichick and how he really is, Bill Belichick is a hero. He has supported what we've been doing for the last 15 years and doing it without any notoriety, et cetera, et cetera. So you have individuals that are stepping up, and a lot of the young individuals now are stepping up. LeBron James is really getting into the situation. Anthony is getting into it. So I want to put these names out there so people know that the modern athlete is getting a bum rap because a lot of them are doing things, but they're not getting publicized, and they're getting criticized for not stepping up. But I think you're going to see a lot of them stepping up in the next year.
That's from your lips to God's ears, man. I'm telling you, Jim Brown, you are the best. I have to ask you a totally irrelevant, trivial question. What about Tom Brady? You think he should have gotten a 4-game suspension?
You know, the one thing that I've learned, Rollo, is that when you get the full information, you can make a judgment. In this situation, we don't have the information that we need to have to really come out and make any judgment. I think, and I like the commissioner. I'm going to say that on record. I like him. I think he tries to...
You like Roger Goodell.
But the bottom line is that his mistake is to make these assessments without really having all of the information. And I think that that's a major problem because in so many cases, it has proven not to be the correct decision. That's a strong penalty for what he is supposed to have participated in, and it's going to play itself out above the commissioner's head. And it didn't have to be that way, I think, if he had really done the proper research, because we still don't know who the people are that broke the rules and how those rules were broken. We have an idea, but we don't really have the facts.
You know, you're so judicious. You're such a... I wish I could clone you, Jim. Every town in this country could use someone like you. I appreciate everything you did on the field, and even more impressive is what you're doing off the field. You really are somebody who's very, very special. If you need me in Jersey when you have your summit, just let me know. Drop me a note, and I'll be there side by side as I was with you at Cabrini Green. You're my kind of man, Jim.
I'll always remember that, Araldo, and I will call upon you. The mayor is, he's quite a guy, but you've always been out there, and we could always call on you, so thank you very much.
All right, Jim, thank you for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Geraldo, live, local, today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Talking gang violence in New York, in Newark. Baltimore in track to have the bloodiest month in the city's history. Jim Brown came on, the former football great, the Hall of Famer. He's doing his American program. So what did you think of Jim Brown nominating?
I thought he was great. You know, I have to tell you, though, that while we were chatting away, I was getting a ton of tweets from people who were saying, how come Geraldo's not bringing up the fact that Jim Brown himself was violent towards women?
He had a violent incident, as far as I know, only the one. You know, you're going to bring up everything every time. I mean, let's say, look at Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis, the Baltimore Raven. Who had, he was involved, witness to the murder in some place some years ago. Ray Rice whacked his wife. I mean, if once they do something, are they then we going to A-Rod Ed Stewart? Do you write them off or do you take them and say, use that redemption as an example to these kids? Because the kids they're dealing with all have some kind of mark on their record. Look at this 14-year-old that got shot, 5 arrests.
Yeah.
Every one of them's got something. You've got to forgive it. You don't forget it, but you use it to fuel your going forward. I think he's doing a great job.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
It may just be more of the same. But sometimes I want to go where everyone knows your name. So I guess I'll have to wait and see. But I'm just going to let something brand new happen to me. And it's all right.
We need heroes, ladies and gentlemen. I understand that Jim Brown may be flawed by something he did long ago in his past. But he is a wonderful, wonderful spokesperson for personal responsibility, taking responsibility for what you have done, who you are, getting your life together. Don't you think, 866 Geraldo, don't you think more celebrities owe it to their constituents, to their fans, to the nation that helped them become famous, rich and famous, to pay something back? Don't you think they are far too reluctant to follow in Jim Brown's footsteps, particularly when it comes to this black-on-black bloodshed? How the inner city of America killing itself? And the activists shamefully focusing only on black lives lost when they're lost to cops. And I talked about how they now have identified the 25-year-old who shot the 14-year-old. And we come to find out that the 14-year-old already had 5 arrests and it was a Bloods Crips thing. To deal with these gangbangers, you know, you could send in Cardinal Timothy Dolan, I guess, that you want someone who's like absolutely spotless. But are the gangbangers going to listen? Are they going to? This is Jim Brown who made a truce. I mean, this is a big deal. 15 years that truce held in the Watts in South Los Angeles between the Crips and the Bloods. The same Crips and the Bloods that you have here. The same. They have different names. What's this one? The, you know, Crib. Oh, here's the Six Wild. That's one. That's one up in the Bronx. The 280 Crew. But they're really Bloods and Crips. I mean, they're basically the red wearing bandanas or blue wearing bandanas. You need a guy like Jim Brown. You need a tough guy. You need me. I mean, really. Why did I do okay in the midst of Baltimore? Because I'm a tough guy. I mean, they can't outstreet me. When I look in the guy's eye and he's coming off on me, I know what his game is. Jim Brown can see right through any kind of BS. But he has set straight so many of these hardcore. LeBron James now getting involved. I'm delighted he's back in Cleveland. I mean, Miami was such a detour. That's what you need. And you know what you need? You need Bill de Blasio to get off his high horse and recognize what this is about. You can't just, he's going to disempower the rich and the privileged. And what will that accomplish? Is that going to stop Bloods and Crips from killing each other? No, Mayor, it's not. Isn't this a hope? We were struggling yesterday. No, I'm late. Me and you. We were struggling. I'm going to get to your calls momentarily. I appreciate them. 866-ROBIN. We were struggling over, okay, now let's do something about it. So easy to bitch about it. Now let's do something about it. This is a great idea.
If, as de Blasio says, what's the new mayor's name?
Ross Baraka.
And Felipe Luciano, my ex-client, young lord, ran for city council. He is Ross Baraka's PR guy.
Right.
So we should get Felipe to get him or get Felipe on the show. Let's do that. Marty, get there. We'll do Felipe next week. Cory Booker. Remember Cory Booker? Glamorous Cory Booker on the Comedy Central every day, Bill Maher's show every day. He was like everybody's favorite black guy, Ivy League black guy. And now he's the senator from New Jersey, and he was the mayor of Newark. He could do nothing. He could do nothing to stop it. Jim Brown has so much more credibility than Cory Booker. Ross Baraka seems so much more practical in his orientation in Newark, where the blood continues to flow also. But we've got to, first of all, you can't fix a problem unless you admit there is a problem. So what's the problem? I think there's a, first of all, in terms of packaging and PR and the angle that people are taking, there's far too much emphasis on police violence directed at the community. And it should not be the only time the community is energized is when a cop does something wrong. Because it is the people who are doing the grossest majority of the wrongs to themselves and others similarly situated. It's the, we have to deal with the cancer at the heart of urban America now. And I'm telling you, cities are killing themselves. We've got to deal with this. All right, now I'm going to shut up. We're going to be all about you. We're going to start with Eddie in New Jersey. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, Harold, that was a good job you did with Jim Brown. I was the guy who called and said you got to get the celebrities involved yesterday.
There you go. So we took your advice, brother.
You just got to bear with me. I'm a little nervous. I thought it was important enough that I write this stuff down.
Go ahead, Eddie.
Because you know what it really comes down to? It's not just
I think
black,
you gave us the idea to call Jim, actually.
Who gave me the idea?
I think you gave us the idea.
Yeah, I did. But, you know, that's in the past. You know, I want to move forward on this. Because this is
go ahead.
Important.
Keep it going.
You know, there's 1,000 reasons why, things don't work. But what really matters is that life matters. Not black, not white. Life in itself matters. You know, it seems like there's a shortage of ideas about what to do. You know, you have to do something. I live, in Clifton, right next door to Patterson, okay? They just declared the Great Falls a National Historical Monument, but, I don't think a lot of people are going to want to go to Patterson.
To see it, yeah, as beautiful as it is, yeah.
Yeah, well, last year there was a 14-year-old girl gunned down, right out of the blue. Patterson's no picnic. But they want to make the Great Falls a national monument. And Patterson was the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution in this country. And it was from hydroelectric power from the Great Falls. And I don't see, instead of declaring it a national monument, why don't they just build it up again and actually make things there?
Yeah, make some electricity there. Yeah, why not? Or make some, bring back some industry there. Some great jobs.
Absolutely, There's plenty of this. We got enough museums. We need jobs out here.
All right, I get that, Ed.
I just want to say, you can do this. You got the, almost like the bully pulpit.
I do, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate listeners like you, brother. I want to get people moving on this thing.
I just want to say you got to go after this with a Willowbrook-like intensity.
You got it. You got my promise. Eddie, I got to move on, but I appreciate it.
All right, you take care.
Okay, thanks again.
Okay.
Here's Ray, our buddy from Rikers, a real realist. I like this guy. What's up, Ray?
My friend, how are you?
Good,
Norm, how you holding up, brother?
I'm good. It's Friday.
Okay, listen. No way is this just gangbangers shooting each other. I can't speak for other cities. I'm going to speak New York City. Listen, you mean to, this is once again misinformation by the de Blasio Unicorn and Rainbow Coalition, dude. This guy has his head in the sand. This is no way just gangbangers.
I agree with you.
This is the elimination of SQF. My dad, you always said, I'm Puerto Rican. My dad always said, every toolbox needs a hammer. SQF was an outstanding tool because the bad guys knew.
I'm with you. Have you heard it called SQF before?
I haven't, no.
I like it. Stop, question, and frisk. But go ahead.
Yeah, bottom line is, when the cat's away, the mice will play. Oh, this is not gangs. Okay, there is a percentage, absolutely. Absolutely, but you mean to tell me as a veteran of Rikers Island, 20 years, that every gun case I have on Rikers right now is a gang?
You tell me.
No.
You tell me.
It's just bad guys taking advantage of a weak administration. That's all it is.
I think that you're onto something. You're right. You know, I think that it is undeniable that the gang situation exacerbates the violence. It is also undeniable that that's not all there is. And I think you got it right. And I believe that along with the velvet glove of the Jim Brown, you need the iron fist of the SQF, the stop, question, and frisk. No one disagrees on that. That's okay. Doesn't make him a bad person.
And I tell you this, and I hate to say this, and I've said, and I hate to say I told you, but I told you the crime and shootings were going to go up.
Yep.
And listen, my friend, I hate to say this even further, it's going to go up even more. Schools are not out yet. The unemployment in minorities between 18 and 25 are through the roof. You know, the so-called activists, where are they now? Now they want an extra 1,000 police, and a few months ago, they were the bad guys.
Well, they aren't the bad guys. We got to help heal that rift, too. Good call again, brother.
4 on 77 WABC.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77 WABC.
25 minutes after 11 o'clock. Thank God it is Friday, May the 29th. Almost over. I wish we could have this month exclusively. Wouldn't that be a fabulous climate?
72 sunny every day.
72 and sunny every day.
Great.
Puerto Rico's like 82 and sunny every day. I mean, I swear, it rains in my little place down there like an hour a day. It's like the perfect weather. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about how to quell this violence that threatens, I think, to take out the heart of a community. I mean, that statistic yesterday that I found in the research, that between the ages of 15 and 34, the number one cause of death of black men is homicide. I mean, to me, that's, can you imagine that? It is so breathtakingly horrifying that that would be. So if you're going to lose a young black man between the ages of 15 and 34, the odds are you're going to lose him to a homicide. Not accident, not suicide, not illness, but a homicide. You know, the murder or manslaughter. It's just, that can't be sustained. And how we have left it unattended. And it's only because of the Baltimore riots and this stuff that we're even talking about.
Yeah.
Or the Michael Brown. It's only because of cops and the increasingly tumultuous relationship with the community that we're even talking about. What is the reality? Why are the cops having so many negative interactions with that community? It's because there's so many negative vibes being put out by the community. It's not the cops come into a situation. It's so dysfunctional. You got all these murders and all the rest of it. You can't blame the cops. I mean, once in a while, you get a cop who's a jerk, and the community sometimes responds fairly when they say, "Well, the cops never get held responsible." But there's a reason for that. You know why they're not? Like Cleveland. Cleveland was 140 shots. So how could a cop possibly be acquitted shooting in the windshield that unarmed black couple? Because the car was backfiring. The Cleveland's the fifth most deadly city in the country. You got all these murders. The cops are constantly being drawn to that community in East Cleveland because of the violence. So they go there, they hear the backfiring. The judge said it is not unreasonable for that officer to have assumed that he was in peril of his life. And so the cop gets acquitted. It's just the way it is.
And, you know, the other thing is, I think people expect cops to fix things. That's not part of the job.
Yeah, man.
I mean, I think that's part of the problem here, too, is when you talk about this, it goes in cycles, this story, is look where we are. We're trying to figure out a way to solve the problem, and we don't know what to do.
But why?
And so everybody who faces it, it's the same thing. I don't know. You know, what do I do? Where do I even start?
Why isn't de Blasio having this conversation with his people?
Well, he should be having this conversation.
Instead, he's going off and talking about whatever the hell he's talking about. And it's not, you can't ignore this. I mean, I remember Ray Kelly. God bless him. Great commissioner.
I think Bertie Carrick was a great commissioner too. Ray had a much longer run. And Ray used to say, and I remember clearly, Ray used to say when the complaints about stop, question, and frisk were really swelling, whose lives are being saved when the murder rate drops from 2,000 a year to 300 a year? Who are that 1,700 surviving, not dead people? It's those people. It's those young black people between the ages of 15 and 34. That's who Ray Kelly's onerous stop, question, and frisk, as annoying as it was, that's whose lives were being saved. I'm sorry I didn't get to your calls this segment. You be patient. I'll get to you. 866 Geraldo, I appreciate it. Talk about the weekend. Curtis is going to join us in the bike ride on Sunday, which will be fun.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
People that follow hockey, man, they are so charged about the Rangers. I'm so excited for them. You know, I'd love to see the Blue Shirts win. So tonight's the big night. They get this win, then they're in the Stanley Cup Finals. So we go Rangers all the way. If I have the chance someday next week, you have to ask me about my experiences at Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch. And the reason I mention it is I noticed that the estate has finally put it up for sale for $100 million. You know, it's 2,700 acres in the prime primo, you know, California there by Santa Barbara. It's just gorgeous, gorgeous, drop dead gorgeous. I was there with Erica a couple of times, and we brought Sol one time, but it's for sale, and, you know, he was such an interesting person. You know, we hear from Ray and Rikers a lot, for our guard there, and we hear from, for some reason, we get a lot of Rikers because we do so much on crime and punishment. But one of the times, I was invited to Rikers by a client of Kubi's at one point. Every lawyer in town represented Gigi Jordan, that 54-year-old who was accused of killing her autistic son. She gave him an OD because she thought he was going to be sexually abused, allegedly, by one of her lovers. Anyway, she was found guilty by the judge to manslaughter. She got an 18-year sentence. I mean, she's already done five. She should have been out on bail during their trial, but they didn't let her. They thought she was a flight risk because she had money. But she got 18 years. And the reason the judge hit her so hard is he said she was not remorseful. And just reading what she said, she had a long, long statement. She never said, "I'm sorry that I did this." And that's what they wanted to hear. So she got 18 years. She wasn't remorseful when I saw her either. She was very defiant in a way, and it cost her now 18 years. She's 54, so, you know, she's done five already. You know, they give her time served, but that's still an awful lot of time. Gigi Jordan, I think that she was treated quite harshly. But again, it was her autistic son that she wanted to kill to protect him. I mean, that's kind of sick. But dealing with autism is very difficult for people. You know, here's a woman who had everything, and she had a hard time. But I know many, many, many people from every place on the social and economic spectrum who are dealing with autism. And autism is very difficult. You don't know what starts it. You don't know why some people pull out of it. Some people go onto the so-called autism spectrum, and then they pull out of it. How do you treat it? People don't know. But my buddy Stephen Victor is a regenerative medicine specialist. He's not a plastic surgeon. I mean, he does some of that stuff, but he's really taking stem cells. He put it in my dead foot. It was killed by the bot surgery at Hospital for Special Surgery. I have to mention that. Stephen Victor is proposing to use stem cells to treat autism, and Dr. Victor joins us on the line now. So Doc, how would you use stem cells, and do you think there's any chance that it could help folks deal with autism?
Hey there, how you doing? So, first of all, the answer is yes. There has been a large study, which I was peripherally involved in Greece, where they did 210 children with autism. And what they found is if you can get a child before puberty there's about 100% chance of improvement in quality of behavior. Now, the one thing I tell everybody, you can't cure autism. You're still going to be autistic. But in this study, anybody who was below puberty showed tremendous improvement in their behavior. So for the family, it was unbelievable, big changes. And for the children, there were some children who were, couldn't talk. And after getting a treatment, they were able to talk.
So where do you put the stem cell? How does it work?
Well, it's pretty easy. Basically, you
harvest. So you take the blood out of them.
No, not blood. This is from the fat.
Oh, fat. I mean, yeah. So you take the fat, and then what?
You take 2 ounces of fat under local. It's pretty easy. And then you basically put it through a special technology. We use ultrasonic cavitation in TeleCell Biosciences. And then after you get the cells, you count them. You make sure they're sterile. And then you give them intravenously, and the growth factor in the cells can actually go into the brain and cross the brain.
But how does it know where to go?
Well, these cells are real smart. They know to go to sites of injuries. And obviously, one of the big theories in autism, there's a lot of injury or inflammation, things going wrong in the brain. So these cells will go to where you have injury. So if you have a bad knee, they'll go to your bad knee if you put them intravenously. So the study showed if you're above puberty, you had about 88% improvement in your behavior. Now, we have been able to do several children in New York City, where we have our facility here, and it's been remarkable improvement on their behavior. But again, I tell parents and I tell people this is early work. 200 is not a lot in medicine. We hope that we continue this work.
Well, let me ask you this. Dr. Stephen Victor is my guest. He's a regenerative medicine specialist. He's a doctor using stem cells now to treat autism. What, first of all, and do as brief as you can if you have an answer, where the hell did this come from? All of a sudden, we have an epidemic of autism. What happened?
You know, autism is growing. I think it's a lot of it is our food. I hate to tell you this. I think in all these preservatives and all these chemicals.
That a pregnant woman eats?
No, we pregnant women eat. You and I eat every day. Schizophrenia, autism, all kinds of various things of cancer, I think are growing in the United States and the world.
So you don't know what causes it? I mean, it's not like a virus.
We have no idea. Unfortunately, I wish it was as simple as a virus, simple as a bacteria. I wish it was something simple. And what's interesting is every single autistic child, Geraldo, is completely different. And if you talk to the autistic...
Why are boys tougher to deal with than girls?
Why are boys tougher to deal with than girls?
With autism.
Question. We've done with boys. They seem to be more violent. They have more behavioral problems. I just think, in a sense, I think one of the mothers of the autistic child said to me, she believes that the boys are more aggressive because guys are just more aggressive. Obviously, there's no scientific data on this.
It's almost 100% of the autistic children I know, teenagers particularly, that I know. The boys are hard to handle. But anyway, how do people get more information, Steve? Stephen Victor, my guest, the doctor. How do they get more information about stem cells in autism?
We have a website, regenmedicalpc.com. They can go to that website and learn stuff. There's a lot of published literature, particularly in Greece. I said this large study. Or if they contact me, we'll be happy to share the Greece study with them. It's a published study that was presented at a big European conference. And because my heart goes out to all the autistic children and the parents, so we can be happy to email it to them or share it with
them.
That'd
be great. Dr. Stephen Victor, give me the website one last time.
It's www.regenmedicalpc.com.
Okay, this is not for getting business for him. This is for information for you folks. So he's good enough to put it up there. Let's take advantage of it. I appreciate it, Steve. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
46 After, Guns is going to join us. A lot of sports stuff. And, and I'll tell you about Curtis joining me and Sol and Erica at the Bergen County Community College on Sunday.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
Guns is here covering the Rangers in the big semifinals, but, you know, he had a wistful morning saying goodbye to Imus on Fox Business.
Yes, sir.
So what was it like seeing the video of me and your old sidekick there?
Oh, it was wild. I came in here. It was the first thing I said to you because, I mean, I know that you're an esteemed, you know, person. You've been around for, quite a number of years now. Not to age you or date you or anything.
45
but
years.
But on Fox Business, though, they played a video of, I never knew that Imus actually introduced you.
He was my announcer.
Yeah, for a show back in the
Good
day.
Good night, America.
Holy God, you look like you had some fun back in the day, man.
It was like a wake and bake kind of show. You guys look like you were just totally wasted.
Imus and me, wake and bake. Yeah. The founders of the Wake and Bake Club.
You looked like you were, too.
You looked like you were dressing for Halloween. But that's how you dress every day, apparently. Oh, my God.
How'd you like the fashions? It was so cool.
It was something.
The platform shoes, I was like 6'2".
Yeah.
That's what my wife said. He goes, what are those on your feet?
Yeah, he goes, that was something cool. It was something. I don't know if cool is the right word. Yeah, but, yeah.
The 70s was really the embarrassing decade when you look back on it. But to the extent that we remember it.
Right.
But Imus was a trip, though.
Oh, man.
He was a trip. He was. We had to sign an associate producer to get him as soon as he woke up, because he'd be so wasted by 10 in the morning that he couldn't be the announcer.
Really?
So we had a girl actually stay over. She stayed there, on the couch. He'd get up. She'd be right by his side. We'd brush his teeth, get him into the car, get him to the studio. And on his way home, he was on his own.
Right. Oh, that's great.
All right, Rangers. What kind of excitement did they generate generally in the general population? I'm not talking about the hockey freaks, generally.
By far. I mean, especially hockey itself, the ratings keep getting bigger and bigger, no matter what. I mean, that's a proven fact. The hockey ratings are getting bigger for, across the country. But here in New York, I mean, it has been on the back pages the last couple of weeks, which usually doesn't really happen. However, since last year when the Rangers went to the Stanley Cup but lost to the Los Angeles Kings, to now the fact that they actually look like they ended the season with the best record in all of the NHL. They look like they do have it. Every game outside Madison Square Garden, they've had the Rangers up on the big screen. They had a big thing at Bryant Park where thousands upon thousands of people went there to watch the game. So the excitement's definitely there. Plus, it's come on now. We all bleed blue today. We're all New Yorkers. I mean, we all want to see them win this Game 7, do or die. They lose, they go home. Plus, who wants to see the Lightning in the Stanley Cup Finals?
So the Lightning, that's the Tampa Bay team.
Yeah, come on now.
They're crazy fans down there.
Right, because they have nothing else ready to go
in
for.
In Tampa.
But it's so new. Like, I was also in Nashville. They had a great team.
The Predators.
I mean, hockey in Nashville.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
But we need this tonight. It's Game 7. Now,
all right, tell us about Lundqvist. Is it all about the goalie?
It is, as far as I'm concerned, and anybody else will tell you that knows hockey, is the fact that the goaltender is just like your quarterback. He is the man that will keep you in the games. I mean, if your offense is a going, you got to make sure that the goalkeeper doesn't give up 4 goals, because then your offense has no chance to turn it
around. So what happened to Lundqvist in those 2 games where he gave up uncharacteristically? He gave up six in two games.
The last game, he just was not paying attention when they lost here at home and they were shut out. He was just not paying attention. He'll be on his game tonight, though. He leads the NHL with the most Game 7 victories with 6. And tonight, another Game 7, 8 p.m. tonight, baby.
Go Blue, go Rangers. Yes, thanks, sir. Guns. Woo. Have a great weekend, everybody. I love you so much. Thank you for listening.